morning, everybody. Glad to see you here. And members of this committee, appreciate you are working with us. I hereby open the meeting of the House Committee on Trade Economic Development. And today is January 14, Friday, the last day of the week, working days I'm talking about. And we have on today's agenda an organizational meeting and a presentation and from the state economist, my good friend, the Jaehyun Park. Is it Park or Park? Park, right? All right. Yeah, thank you very much for coming. We are going to have a first item of business is adoption of committee rules. And Jim Stembridge, the experienced administrator, whom I have worked with him, how many years?
Now it's been 6 or 8 years, I think.
Six years. Yeah. Yes, we've been working together. And he's going to give us briefings of the rules. And we're very fortunate having you as our administrator.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. And please give us what the rules is about.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you for that introduction also. And I would just say that when you say that I'm experienced, it just takes away excuses that I might have for making mistakes. So these are the rules that are proposed for the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development. They're the same rules that are being looked at by every committee. And I can go down through them briefly here, since there are several new members to the House of Representatives. Rule number one, does everybody have a copy of this, by the way? I have more copies if anybody needs it.
John.
The first rule says committee rules may be amended by affirmative vote of the majority of the committee, but at least one day's notice shall be given in writing to each committee member. The second rule says a quorum shall be comprised of a majority of the members appointed to the committee. In the absence of a quorum, the chair may assign fewer members to receive public testimony. A quorum for such hearings shall be one member. Three, the chair shall call committee meetings, set agendas, and cause notice of time and place of the committee meetings. Rules number four and five have to do with subcommittees. I don't know if rules have subcommittees, but it is the speaker who designates the subcommittees. I'm just going to go on to rule number six. Notice of any full committee or subcommittee meeting shall specify whether the committee or subcommittee will conduct a hearing, work session, or both. Testimony shall be taken at a hearing but need not be taken at a work session. Rule number seven, all committee and subcommittee meetings shall be open to the public and press. Number eight, the chair may set a time limit on public testimony for the purpose of accommodating the greatest number of witnesses. Number nine, any member of the full committee may attend and participate in a hearing or work session of a subcommittee. This is another subcommittee rule. Number 10 is the rule that requires a quorum, an affirmative vote of the majority of the appointed members to do committee action. And those committee actions are listed A through F, to cause a measure to be introduced by the committee, to table a measure, to remove a measure from the table, to amend a measure, to send a measure to the floor of the House, or to approve any recommendations. A motion in committee does not require a second. Upon the request of two members, a roll call vote shall be taken and recorded on any question. And then this rule number 13 has to do with the minority reports. And it's in the what do they say on the airlines? In the unlikely event of a minority report, we should read this paragraph. The notice of intent to file a minority report may only be applied to a measure reported out of committee. Minority report shall be subscribed to by at least two committee members who are present and vote in opposition to the committee report. So if you want to do a committee report or a minority report, you have to be present, you have to vote no. You have to be two of you. Shall notify the chair or the committee staff by 5 p.m. of the session day on which final action of the measure was taken or before adjournment of the committee meeting during which such final action was taken if adjournment is later than 5 p.m. Any members giving such notice shall have 48 hours after giving notice or until 5 p.m. of the second following session day, whichever is earlier, to deliver the minority report, including a legislative council draft, to the committee staff. Minority report shall be filed at the desk on the same day the committee report is filed. No member shall sign on more than one minority report on the same measure. I might also mention that your chamber rules also have provisions that affect this committee rule. Rule number 14, proposed amendments by other than members of the Legislative Assembly must be submitted in writing to committee staff at least 48 hours prior to the work session at which they are to be considered. And rules number 14 and 15, I might say, have to do with conceptual amendments. We want to get away from conceptual amendments. We're trying to provide time here so that we can make sure that any amendments that you consider are drawn up by Legislative Council in the proper legislative form and format. Rule number 15 says the committee shall not report a measure to the floor of the House unless the written legislative council amendments accompanying the report have been approved by a majority of the members of the committee at a meeting called for that purpose. In addition, the committee shall review any fiscal or revenue impact statement issued in compliance with House Rule 8.20. And that is your staff's responsibility to make sure we get that to you for your consideration on the final action on a bill. And it says, this is the exception to this, any correction of clerical errors on amendments need not be approved by a majority of the members, but shall be signed for by the committee chair. The corrected amendments must bear the written caption corrected. So if there's a clerical error, that won't hold things up. Those are the rules, Mr. Chairman. Members?
Thank you very much. Before we go on, I just want to thank you, Mr. Patrick Brennan, for setting up all the systems here, and we do appreciate that for your extra work. Thank you very much. All right, you heard the proposed rules, and is there a motion to pass these proposed rules?
I would make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Let me see, Representative Dunham, that the proposed rule to pass. Is there any discussion? I think the rules is very clear. And since there is no discussion, any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the motion passes and the committee rules are adopted. At this time, I'd like to have the opportunity that each member to introduce himself or herself and what your name, your district, the little background of yourself, and then also I'm going to introduce our staff members also. So why do we not start from the left? I understand we have brand new four members, am I correct? And including including Representative Buckley on my far left, and then Representative Boone, and Representative Riley, and also Representative Dellum. I understand that just a newly elected member of this mm-hmm. body, and also the new member of this TNE. That doesn't mean, you know, I have 9 years experience. That doesn't mean I know better, but at least this is a good group. And also, Representative, let me see, Nelson, all right. Have you served in the TNE before?
No.
Okay, so it seems to me I am the only one that served in the TNE in the last 8 years when I was a senator. And do I get some authority out of it? All right, so why don't you start with your background first?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here on this committee and look forward to your leadership and making the most of your experience. I represent the district that contains Jacksonville, Phoenix, Talent, and Ashland in Southern Oregon. My background is in theater. I graduated with a theater degree from the University of Santa Clara in 1979, and I've worked in theater for most of my adult life. As part of my work in theater, I became a producer in my late 20s and worked to develop theater festivals and to work with international theater festivals, taking productions around the world. One of the reasons I wanted to be on this committee was that I'm very much inspired by the process of going from an idea to a reality, taking a concept that can bring benefit to people, whether it be an idea that's going to go forth on a theatrical stage or an idea that's going to work in terms of economic development for a community, an idea that might bring together businesses for a common purpose, or in particular ideas that start new businesses. And I'm particularly interested in the healthcare delivery system that we have in our state, innovations in that system that might lead not only to new jobs, but also to reducing the price of healthcare in our state, particularly through the use of high tech. I'm very interested in pursuing sustainable yield practices in our state and the markets for high quality lumber products. I'm also very interested in pursuing the ideas of organic beef and chicken, expanding the markets for those products from our state, as well as the markets for our fine Oregon wines. And I appreciate the time to introduce myself.
Thank you very much, Representative Buckley. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Donna Nelson from District 24. This is my third term here in the legislature. In my first life, I was a teacher, a high school and college teacher, and most recently returned during the interim to Western Oregon University to get my elementary credential with a desire to end illiteracy in the state and to produce the TV show Readers Are Leaders. In addition to that, the next portion of my life, I spent as senior vice president and member of the board of directors of Evergreen International Aviation, the world's most diversified aviation corporation, and the owner of the Spruce Goose Museum. Happened to be the originator of that concept. So if you haven't visited McMinnville and our great museum, I invite you to do so. I spent most of my life in 178 countries building bases and companies and divisions of Evergreen, and also handling the large financing of various ventures. Also have been a farmer, potato farmer, and a llama farmer, and a boar goat farmer as well. And I also have, since I retired from Evergreen, have had my own business, 3M Associates, involved in market and management development. And I'm also an auctioneer, and I conduct charity auctions all over the state, and it's an honor to help various charities and philanthropic organizations. I'm particularly honored to serve on this committee, Mr. Chair, because I felt in the last two legislatures we've been greatly remiss in building jobs. I felt we needed a WPA. We needed programs, and we have been dilatory in doing what we should have done. At that time, when I first began, we were the hungriest state. We had a tremendous number of homeless individuals, and we have not done our due diligence nor our duty in developing businesses and eliminating the regulatory environment in which our businesses are attempting to survive. So I hope I'll be of benefit to this committee, having built bases across the nation and around the world. I also am greatly enthusiastic about reinstilling and local control of economic dollars in the community, and I have a strong belief that economic dollars are best spent by those who know how they best should be spent. And when we consider the overhead of our agency is $10 million biennium, you know, you just think, you know, in one decade, that's $50 million that could be going into programs and building businesses and communities. So I certainly hope that we'll look at that and how this department can become a part of the counties and their various industrial promotions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Buckley, and Vice Chair Mookie.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I recall that one of the first people I met in this body in 1997 was when I came down to talk about promoting visits by international business leaders to Oregon, and you were serving on the relevant committee, and I had a chance to talk with you about that and others. And I'm happy to report that of the roughly 400 leaders a year, many, many, many contracts have come out of those visits over the years since you and I first met now 7 years ago. And the prospect of serving on this committee really is a delight to me. I think that one area that is absolutely beyond partisanship is the issue of building an economy and building jobs, whether you look at it from the viewpoint of the bottom line for business or you look at it from the viewpoint of being at the heart of a family's stability, prosperity, and happiness. It is absolutely critical. So I look forward to wrestling with the issues our state faces and promoting our products, promoting our businesses, making it possible for them to do business effectively, and in the process helping to create jobs. So thank you for the opportunity to serve on this committee.
Thank you, Vice Chair. And next to Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Scott Bruin, and I am a freshman legislator from House District 37, which is primarily Westland, Tualatin, and it's a real honor for me to serve up here with you and the rest of my colleagues on this committee. My background is in commercial banking and commercial construction. I have an undergraduate degree from the University of Oregon and a master's in business from Portland State, so a little bit of business background both in the job and the education front. I'm proud to be here because I think that the work that this committee does and the task of economic development on whole is the most important task facing the state of Oregon right now. And I say that because for, well, almost 2 years now, Oregon has led the nation in unemployment. Recently we've been told that we've moved, instead of being the worst state in the nation, we're number 48 or 49, but I'm not sure that's great solace to the thousands of Oregonians who remain unemployed. I believe that we cannot begin to address all those other problems that the state faces, whether it's funding for education, for universities, funding for public safety, until we can once again get Oregonians back to work and once again make this state a jobs-creating machine. I believe our work on this committee is many-fold. I believe we always have to look at the tax and regulatory environment and how that affects businesses both staying in the state and coming to the state. But I think even more important than that is the emphasis not only from this body, from the House, from the legislature, from the governor's office, but in governments across the board in the state of Oregon. It's more of a mindset that reaches out to business and says, how can we help you? How can we help you succeed? And doesn't wait until a business is bankrupt or halfway across the border before we ask what's wrong. So certainly our charge as legislators is quality of life, but we must always remember that quality of life begins with a job. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Boone and Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am very happy to be on this committee. It's one of the committees that I actually requested to be on, and so that was very pleasing to me. I represent the House District 29, which is Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, the heart of Washington County. And one of the things you'll learn about me very quickly is I don't tend to talk as much as my other colleagues. It's certainly not as long. And my career has been mostly in the computer area. For the last several years, I've owned my own small business as a business consultant and working with companies large and small to solve their problems. And I hope that background will hold me in good stead in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Riley. Representative Dunham.
Thank you, Chairman Lem. I hope to learn from my colleague from Hillsborough and talk less and listen more. I now have 9 pages of introduction to go through. I've been in education for 35 years. I was a teacher for 10 years, and as a teacher I coached, taught speech, taught social studies, English, was president of our local association for 3 years. So I feel I'm fairly comfortable with how the teaching process works. I was a superintendent for 25 years, mostly in small schools. And in the recent past, I was a board member. I'm a husband, 4 children, a father, and a grandfather, 4 times. And I'd like to get together with any of you that have children and grandchildren and just brag. I've been president and chairman of the board of a health insurance company. I was on the board of the Guaranteed Student Loan Program. I think I have some business sense, but I think what I really want to leave you with is I come from House District 59. That goes from Mosier to Arlee, from Mosier down to Mopin, Madras, Black Butte, over to Mitchell, Dayville, John Day, Prairie City, back up to Long Creek, and then into Arlee. It's a huge district. And I'm most familiar with the Dalles. If Oregon has led the nation most recently with the dubious distinction of being number one in unemployment, the Dalles and Washoe County have been number one in the state. And that is something that I want to rectify. The Dalles, at least Washoe County, I can testify, is on the move. Our port is busy. Our chamber is busy. We do not ask for handout. We do not ask for hand up. We ask for you to come alongside of us and help us improve our community. Madras is busy preparing for the prison to come. They're not waiting for the state of Oregon. They're doing the things that they have to do to prepare their community to receive business. I would like to step alongside them, remove the obstacles that make their preparation difficult. They're trying to build homes for their community when, and they're fairly certain that they're going to have a prison there. I want to go out to John Day. John Day is wants nothing more from the state. In fact, John Day is very conservative. They'd like a lot less from the state. Thank you very much. But they had three mills at one time. In fact, as I was campaigning, I met a man that was home on his porch, and it was the middle of the day. And as I approached his porch, he said, "I don't want an extended unemployment. I don't want a free food basket. I want a job." And that was poignant. I used that example through the campaign. This morning I had breakfast with one of the representatives. He said, "How many jobs have we created?" "So far, one." And I think it already existed. That's the secretary in my office. When I leave this committee, I would like to be able to say that we created jobs in Oregon and that we put Oregon on the move again. Sherman County and Wheeler and Gillum County, I also represent. Wonderful people, industrious, on the move. They also, I represent some of the counties that are losing population. When we talk in terms of Intel and Representative Riley's district and the number of jobs that they've lost, in Wheeler County, two jobs is a big count. So I'm very interested in jobs and jobs on the other side of the mountain in Oregon. Thank you for the nine pages. Representative Riley, I will take your lesson from this time forward.
And my name is John Lim. My district is District 50, which is Gresham area. I was elected 1992 for the first time. And since then, I served two terms in the Senate, which is 8 years. During my 8 years as a state senator, I served the first 2 years as a vice chair of the Trade and Economic Committee in the Senate, and the following 6 years, I served as a chair of a Trade and Economic Committee in the Senate. And then last year, I was term limited out 2000, and then last year John Minnis was appointed to the state safety standards. What's the name of it? STPP.
Public Standards, yes. Safety Commission.
That's a long name anyway.
Public Safety. Okay.
And he was appointed by the governor, so I was his replacement, filling out his 1 year term. Since then, I got fired up again, so I ran for the state representative. Many people ask me why from the senator to the House. And it is obvious I want to be the majority. So that's and so that's, as I predicted, that's what happened. When I was a senator, our economy was going good, but as soon as I get out from the Senate, our economy is showing weakness and going down. So there was no other alternative, but I have to come back to make our state economy make it strong again, and it's already showing it. And so even I heard radio this morning, unemployment month already is going down, so it is a good sign. Whether it's my effort or the timing, I don't know, but anyway, it's getting better. And it's good to be appointed by the speaker to be the chair of a TNE of the House. And the House senior members tried to treat me as a rookie new member of the House. I said I have some Senate experience in the last 9 years. Finally, I was able to convince them to appoint me to the of this position. It is a very honorable position. And we have the experienced leader, not only in the community and also in this chamber. So we have a good member, balanced member, including one beautiful lady here. So we are going to move well. I see the problems in our state. And even though economy improving, our state unemployment rate is one of the, if not the highest, the one of the highest in the nation. We are charged to improve the situation. And we will be working with the other members of the House and the Senate, and including the governor's office. We have to do that. And whenever that hits national economy downhill, we are the hardest hit in the nation. Has been always. I think we need to do something about it, creating some rainy day funds. We have an international trade office in Portland downtown, and the international office in Japan, Seoul, and we have a liaison office in Taiwan and China. I don't know whether we still have South America, but the total economy of our state, about 30% of that total comes from the international trade. It used to be about 10% 30 years ago. Right now, international trade getting bigger and bigger. And so it is very important factor. Our state agriculture and high-tech and timber and the transportation equipment, whatever, we are depending on international trade. Even though our economy is just 1% of our national gross product, still, you know, we have a large share of international trade. And we have the problem that the rural and then urban disparity. And the Portland area might be going good, but the rural area always has been a great problem, unemployment and the depressed economy. Somehow we need to address those issues. So as the chair of TNE of the House, the esteemed member of this TNE, let's do the best we can to improve the economy. And people's crying out more money for education and healthcare plus many other services. Only money will be available more is through the economic development. People is not, are not willing to pay additional taxes, but as the growth of the economy, as the pies of the economy is getting bigger, we shall be able to have more money for this additional program. So with that, and I'm excited, and we are ready to roll up our sleeves, and we are ready to work. And before we go on, I'd like to introduce Jim Stanbridge. Why don't you give us some background?
I'm Jim Stanbridge. I'm pleased to be your committee staff, along with Aaron Seiler. My background is, originally it was in geography. I'm also have some experience in teaching. I studied coastal hazards in Oregon a quarter of a century ago, and then I came to work with the state of Oregon about 25 years ago, and I worked with the Soil and Water Conservation Commission, I worked with the Employment Department, I worked with the State Fire Marshal, I worked with the Construction Contractors Board. I hope it doesn't bother you too much. And for about the last 8 years I've been with the legislature, and I've worked business committees, I've worked Senate rules last session. I retired a year ago and came back to work the session because I just love being with you folks.
Okay. And our assistant, Aaron Seiler, and we are very happy to have you with us as our assistant. Could you give us your little background, if you care to?
You might ask her to move to the microphone.
Yes, why don't you move to the microphone?
Yeah.
This is my first time working in the House. I was an intern a couple terms ago for Representative Gardner. Got a little taste of the experience then. But I am a graduate of Western Oregon University with a degree in political science. And I'm currently working on my master's degree at Portland State in political science. I had this opportunity, I was at a good point in my thesis to take the term off and had this great opportunity, so I'm very happy to be here.
Okay. Thank you very much. You are a great addition to our committee and appreciate that, working with us. All right. With that, next we have a presentation on Oregon's economy from the State Office of Economic Analyst. And Mr. Terryham Beck has been a good friend of mine. He is a deputy state economist. And Mr. Beck, we'd like to welcome you. Thank you very much for your time. Okay, sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, this is Dave Back, Office of Economic Analysis. Usually Tom comes here and entertain you, but today he's very busy in Portland. He's got a council. I'm substituting. And I thought it a little bit appropriate for me to talk about the status of Oregon's economy more or less academically, because I'm also teaching at Oregon State still. Before I started working at the state, I was an assistant professor at the Oregon State University. So I share your I share our teaching background with you guys. And I have come to the state capitol from time to time, but I'll have to say I'm always nervous in front of you respected members of the committee. So it'll be a while before I settle down a little. Please forgive me for my nervousness.
So you are not the one, we are nervous too, so please, okay.
I have a handout for you, and I hope you just don't strain your eyes too much. A relatively small screen here. Now, we say Oregon is an open economy in the sense that a lot of our products are being shipped out of state and to foreign countries. Manufactured products, and agricultural products, and forest products. A great majority of them are being shipped out. Now, we do have a huge presence of domestic sector, which depends on income and population. But as far as spillover effects are concerned, it's the manufacturing sector that contributes a lot to our state economy. To what's going to happen, and to understand why we are here in our state in terms of economy, we have to understand the global and national economic conditions. So my plan for today is, first I'm going to talk about industry composition of this state, And then we're going to take a look at history of our economy and evaluate current conditions. So in there, I'm going to talk about employment situation and unemployment situation. And of course, as the chair mentioned, international trade is a huge part of our economy. So we're going to touch on export. And then finally, demographic information is such an important element in understanding our economy and how where it is headed. And for that, I would recommend you to have a chance to listen to our demographer. After that, I'll briefly touch on global and national economic environment, then I'll touch briefly on Oregon's economic outlook. So, so history and current conditions. Very small, but the essence of this discussion on real gross state product is that over the last decade or so, our high tech sector grew quite a bit. Well, that's an understatement. In terms of nano dollars, the size of the economy, size of high tech sector increased about 2,000% in real dollars. It increased over 4,000%, 40-fold increase. Now, in terms of money that we have in our pocket, these real numbers do not really mean much. So you have red number here, $44 billion in the electronic equipment. That's in terms of real dollars, which is based on 1996 dollars. And we have to consider technological innovation in there. So in terms of nominal dollars, current dollars, in 2001 dollars, it's about $19 billion. So the total value of outputs produced in the state in 2001 was about $120 billion. And out of that, about $20 billion is coming from electronic equipment alone. And over the same period, actually, our manufacturing sector's share of output in the total economy increased from about 17% to about 39%. Again, it's in terms of real dollars. So if you just look at the current dollars, it's just nominal dollars that we have in our pocket. At the end of 2001, manufacturing was explaining about $30 billion worth of output out of $120 billion. So it's about 25% or so. So these real numbers tend to distort the real picture, I should say, because it is the money we have in our pocket that counts more, instead of where would these output be valued in terms of 1996 dollars, and when we after we consider technological innovation. So I pay more attention to nominal dollars, and in terms of nominal dollars, still manufacturing sector is about 25%, and electronic equipment explains $20 billion worth of output.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, is it Doctor?
Well,
Mr. or Doctor?
Mr. is fine.
Okay. Mr. Beck, could you tell me where you're seeing those numbers, $30 billion and lost? Are they on this chart, $30 billion for manufacturing?
Oh, they're not there. So that's why I That's why I'm mentioning, because, you know, economists, they're in such fund of real dollars. Okay, let's have some, excuse me, I'm ignoring the Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. These $900 are not in this chart.
Okay.
And I can certainly provide you with the data, but I wanted to emphasize that these real dollars tend to distort the real picture a little bit, so that's why I had to mention.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Beck, we would appreciate those if you wouldn't mind to follow up and give us those real dollars.
Mr. Chair,
thank you.
Representative Nelson, I will surely do that.
Now, could you give all the information to the each members, please?
Yes, I will.
Yes, and Jim Stenbridge.
Mr. Beck, I just wanted to review for a second for the members. This chart has the entire Oregon economy represented. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so if you look at that, where it says 2001 share, that that column, that's the second column from the right, that is kind of what I asked, that I thought would be a good idea for them to see, what is what the share is of each of Oregon's industries of the total.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to make sure that the members knew that that's what we were looking at in that particular column.
Thank you for that.
Well, may I, Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nelson.
May I ask the good administrator, what is FIRE?
Oh, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, FIRE stands for fire. I mean, finance, insurance, and real estate.
All right, thank you. I should have figured that out.
Yes, Vice Chair Merkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find two numbers interesting on here. I just want to make sure I understand this. When you have under private industries, you show 10-year growth of 94.7%. And then under government, you have 10-year growth that's 27.4% growth. Are you saying there that growth in private industries has significantly outpaced the growth in government?
That's it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Merkley, that is entirely correct. We're going to see employment composition later on, but the government sector actually has declined in terms of its importance in the state. Employment went down as a share of total employment, and then also the value added here actually declined out of total value added in the state too. So over the 15-year time span, the government sector, public sector, declined not only in terms of employment share, but also in terms of output share, too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meade, are these figures available regionally?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dallin, unfortunately, we don't have comparable data for different regions in the state.
And Mr. Peck, when do you think we can have a latest data that the 2002-03? This is up to 2001, right?
Mr. Chair, yes. In December, 2002 data became available, but there is an industry classification system change from so-called SIC codes to NAICS codes, which means the longer time span comparison is not available. Now, if you look at 2002 data, there isn't really much change from 2001, but because of industry classification change, 2001 and 2002 data are not comparable. And that's why we stopped at 2001 at this point. And as as Bureau of Economic Analysis, the Commerce Department distribute more data down the road, we will have comparison data available for you. But at this point, the comparable data exists for 1991 through 2001. But after that, there is an industry coding assistant change, so data are not comparable.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Mr. Beck, not to get ahead of you, but thank you for this information. Comparing other states of our size, do we have that comparison? Are we with maybe some most similar demographics? Do we have? Are we worse or better?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I will have a chance to talk a little bit about the comparison between our state and neighboring states and the nation. But what I can say at this point is the urban economy is becoming just like the U.S. economy. We are moving very much close to the average behavior of the national economy. So the composition, although we have a little bit of more manufacturing sector presence, the other sectors like retail trade, services, and government sectors and all that, they are quite comparable to the U.S. averages. So our economy is moving toward the national average. That is a definite trend. Right. We looked at industry composition through value-added approach, so-called gross state product. Now, in terms of employment, we find a remarkable similarity between Oregon and the nation. And there is in terms of employment shares, you don't see much change between 1990 and 2003. Now what that means is, even though employment didn't change much in certain sectors like electronic equipment, the value added in that sector, total value of output added in that sector was huge. Now, in 2003, we had 1.562 million jobs. That's non-farm jobs. And this rough estimate, it's hard to measure real good estimate of, it's hard to get a real good estimate of farm jobs or agricultural jobs, but it's estimated to be about 60,000 to 70,000 in this state. But for non-farm sector in the state, we had about 1.56 million, and out of this, private sector explained about 83% of total jobs, and 17%, of course, it's government sector. Out of these jobs, manufacturing is about 12.5%. It's down from about 15-16% in 1990. Compared to Washington State, we have a little higher manufacturing presence, and of course, against the national average, also we have a little bit higher manufacturing presence. In computer and electronics, such a high sector in this country, in this state, it's an important sector, but employment-wise, it counts about 2.6%, and the value of output explained by that sector is about one-sixth in terms of nominal dollars. Compared to Washington State, we have really a much stronger presence of computer electronics, and that's one of the reasons why Washington State could get out of recession a little bit faster than us. Their unemployment rate is a little bit lower than us, than ours, and it was in the IT sector, especially in our computer and electronics sector, that had a huge slowdown in the past 4 or 5 years, and Washington State had a little less presence of it. So, the presence of computer and electronics, although employment share is low, because it adds a lot of value to our income, that's one of the reasons we could point out as high unemployment in Portland metro area in particular.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Yes, Representative Bruin.
Yeah, just Dr. Beck, does computers and electronics include software?
Mr. Chair and Representative Bruin, this is just manufacturing sector, and software now belongs to information sector, and it doesn't include.
Thank you.
Oops. All right. I have to tell you that I have a very large number of slides. Some of the slides don't take too much time to cover, but the information about Oregon is contained in the first about 25 slides. So if I can get through with all these 25 slides, I'll be happy. The rest of the slides, probably a lot of background information on the global and national economy, and I'll be glad to discuss all of them as time allows. Now, if you look at Oregon's non-farm employment, we had really high rates in the 80s, late 80s, and in the middle of 90s, we had also high employment growth. Now, for about 5-6 years, our employment growth rate is below national employment growth rate. And that's one of the reasons why we have such slow personal income growth. So we had a very severe recession starting in 2001. So we have 3 consecutive years of job losses starting from 2001. And in 2004, finally, we gained back some of the jobs that we lost. That's a refreshing change. Now we have posted positive economic, positive employment growth for several quarters already. So that's a good thing. We have a momentum going into next year. Now, I briefly mentioned that starting from 1998, our employment growth stayed below national average and until last year. And this year, the data just came in yesterday about employment. We have to do some more analysis, but it seems like we have achieved 1.8% job gains. That was our forecast about 3-4 months ago. And the national employment growth was about 1%. So finally, we're gaining jobs faster than the nation. From the peak of our employment, that was when we're still enjoying the boom from the late 90s. So the peak of the job number occurred in November 2000. Since then, we lost about 65,000 jobs. Now we recovered about 40, 5,000, and we need to gain back about 20,000 more. If you look at the unemployment rate by region, by the way, this is November data. In December, we have about 6.8%, the data show. Here, we have 7.1% seasonal adjusted. Now, Portland metro area has about 6.4%. The rest of regions are higher. These numbers reflect seasonality. You know, the winter time is slow in these parts of the state, so they have relatively higher unemployment rate. But the Oregon's unemployment rate is still high, and I'd like to add a little more academic discussion to this. Our unemployment rate is higher for many different reasons. Now, manufacturing slowdown certainly explains some of our high unemployment, and we have a lot of seasonal jobs for sure, so that explains a little bit of unemployment. Now, our state is going through change in industry competition, so we're losing some of traditional jobs, and we're gaining some of new information related jobs. So we're going through some of technological changes, so that creates some of unemployment. But at the same time, people do not really talk about so-called hysteresis phenomenon. Once a person is unemployed for an extended period of time, the person is not really fit for new jobs anymore. We need to train. So a person who is on unemployment for a long period of time cannot find new jobs easily. The world is changing. So this is not just a random thought, but agreed by most of the economists, that we have to have an early intervention. When once a person is unemployed, then we should do every means possible so that this person doesn't go on unemployment too long. So that's one of the recommendations that economists make. So early intervention, I mean, not just in terms of child development, but also in terms of, you know, job market intervention. We need that concept. One more concept, actually, that could help you think when you talk about, you know, trying and solving this unemployment problem is, in Europe, we have so-called Eurosclerosis problem, and the market is, especially the labor market, is very, very rigid, and unemployment benefits are high, generous, I should say, and it's not easy to fire workers in European countries.
Okay, Dr. Beck?
Yes.
And as you present the current and the past conditions, could you give us what we can do, what the government can do, improve the situation, at least give us some ideas, okay, if you could.
Mr. Chair, I would love to do that, and I look forward to working with you down the road. Some of the things that I would touch on today would reflect some of my thinkings. So as I have time, I will talk about, you know, what I have in mind as far as you know, improving our economy is concerned.
Mr. Chairman, you call me.
That's it, Dallum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Meek, why are the unemployment rates in the brown section so stubborn? I know that your data is not collected regionally, but every time I see a report, the upper half of the brown section seems to be the most stubborn area in the state to pick up employment. Do you have any idea why that is? And again, I'm going to join the chairman and look for reasons that we might be able to nudge that number down.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dallin, I probably you could find reasons from a structure point of view. The industry is changing, so you will see some of the people left behind because of lack of skills. But that's one. But at the same time, I mentioned briefly, there is a phenomenon called hysteresis. So it's like you stop in front of a traffic light. You're the first car in front of the traffic light. You can move fast, but at the same time, if you're 10th car from the traffic light, you have to wait a while to see an employment change, to see your car moving. So what happens is the areas that can move fast in terms of adapting to new technologies, new changing environments, they will see a decline in unemployment or increase in employment first, and then gradually the other area can benefit from these improving conditions in fast starting or fast moving regions. So high unemployment is a very serious problem, but at the same time, we need patience. We should not discourage a development, a fast development from certain regions to provide more resources to the lagging regions. And I'm talking about this from pure economist standpoint of view, not as a policymaker, not as a politician. You need resources in high unemployment regions. There's no question about that. We have to bring up these people. On the other hand, it is also beneficial to all of us if we can support the fast-growing regions, because then there will be spillovers coming from these regions, and that spillover effect will be great for the entire state. So I may not have touched on exactly why, but having mentioned structural reasons and hysteresis reasons, the question is, how do we go about lowering unemployment rate? My sense is, my recommendation is, we should not punish fast-growing regions. We're going to reward them. But at the same time, the lagging regions may have to take a little time or may have to wait a little to see benefits coming from other regions. Well, that may not have answered.
That may not have answered and created great turning in my stomach.
I'd be glad to sit down with you and talk a little more about it.
Yeah, it seems as though a follow-up question, Mr. Chairman. I asked why so stubborn, and that makes sense to me, but that region is historically higher than everywhere else. Is historically stubborn, and I like the analogy of the car at the stoplight, but it seems like the stoplight goes back to red before we ever get up to have our turn.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Bell, that's an interesting observation, but you moved about five cars You moved a little bit closer to the traffic light. That's how I look at it.
So I think that's the huge issue, and we will continue to discuss on this issue, and we will try to find the answers for that. And so we'll be working together on it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair and Jim, how much more time do I have?
Okay, I think we should be able to finish it up in an hour, if possible. So, since you have quite a pages, I think it's good to speed up a little bit.
Okay, thank you. Unemployment rate for selected states. You see Oregon relatively high, especially compared to the neighboring states and the U.S. average. We're well aware of these problems. Now, our state depends, especially in the manufacturing sector, depends on our exports to especially Asian countries and Canada. Of course, the second biggest item of our export is agricultural products, so we should not forget about that. But in terms of total exports, we had some good years. Now, because of information technology boom right here, we had some good years, and then we had a bust here, and we're recovering from it, and that bodes very well for our manufacturing sector. Now, in terms of our exports to the rest of the world, by the way, this doesn't include our exports to other states. So, these export figures only consider international exports. Now, as you know, computer and electronic products are the biggest item and dominates all other items. The second biggest item is agricultural products and transportation equipment, machinery, and chemical products, including fertilizers. The biggest export destination is Canada, and transportation equipment is the biggest item there. Japan imports a lot of our agricultural products and high-tech products. In South Korea, also electronics and agricultural products. In China is a huge market, but we're not taking full advantage of it yet. Although our exports to China is increasing very rapidly. Also, China imports a lot of high-tech products and agricultural products. Taiwan also is the fifth biggest our export destination, and there are some other Asian countries that were affected by recent tsunami a little, but the manufacturing centers of these countries are not affected much, and my guess is our exports or our manufacturing sector and agricultural sector will not be affected much due to this tsunami. We had we have three consecutive job losses in the past 3 years, but this year we're going to have 1.8% job gain. So our personal income gains were very, very disappointing in the past several years. So if you look at the red bar, these are Oregon personal income growth in nominal terms. And the green bar is U.S. personal income growth. What happened was, starting from 1998, there was it was a year was a period right after Asian financial crisis. Our personal income growth has been lagging behind the United States. The national average was higher than our employment growth, our personal income growth. Now, the trouble was in our state, we had higher inflation. The problem is, in our state, we had higher population growth. Combined, per capita purchasing power declined. And that hurt our retail and service sector too. The consequence was 3 consecutive years of job loss between 2001 and 2003. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mac. May I ask you a question, please, Dr. Beck, before you go further?
Yeah.
Back to the exports, Oregon's total exports were international, mm-hmm. I believe you said. It didn't include exports to the states. Would you look at that chart? If I read it right, our exports are $2.8 billion. Am I reading correctly? In 2004?
Okay. That's just, yes.
$2.8
billion? Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative, this is a quarterly figure,
so
which means if you multiply about 4, you're going to get the annual figure. So annual figure is over $11 billion.
Okay.
Yes.
$11 billion. Okay. So multiply, yeah, 2.8 by 4.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Okay. And then, therefore, when you go to the 1-2 past this charts, two charts past this, Oregon exports by country,
yes,
that only amounts to $1.3 billion. So again, you multiply that by 4.
Oh, okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, this is this chart shows only top 5 countries.
Okay.
So
okay, thank you. Only the
top. A lot
top
of other countries. Thank you.
So I'm just curious, what is the number that we export to our own other states? Do you know that number?
That is very hard to capture. Because what happens is we are going to receive a lot of raw materials and equipment from other states, and we're just exporting back finished products to them, and as well as we are sending a lot of our raw materials and then getting back some of the finished products to our state. So it is hard to come up with the appropriate the right about even decent estimate of state to state trade. So that's why we just cannot track that. But because of our manufacturing presence, there's no question that a good portion of our manufactured products are being shipped out. And in terms of nominal dollars, as of 2001, about $30 billion worth of total output is explained by the manufacturing sector. So then a good portion of that manufactured product will be shipped out.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, please.
Representative Nelson.
Well, then, I guess what I would really like to know is comparison of imports and exports. You know, what are we doing? Trade agreements, I think, are a very important part of this committee. Is it possible to get that information? You know, how much more are we importing from South America than we are exporting in all these areas? Would it be possible to know that? And also, if I could, Mr. Chair, just for a bit of humor, Oregon's the seventh largest importer of garbage, and the state of Washington is the 12th largest exporter of garbage. And for example, I'm just, you know, want to be sure that, you know, we're into usable products, you know, because those three and a, whatever it is, seven million or 10 million tires that we allow Utah and Washington to dump on us every year are not imports.
The real deal. Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Dunn. I'd like to point out that that import of garbage is one of the highest employers we have in House District 59. I'm getting nervous again.
I would like to respond to that, Mr. Chair. May I?
You may.
Yes, Representative Dowen, let me assure you that every one of those is a usable resource. So instead of putting them into our agricultural land, we could be making products with those rubber tires. In the last assembly, we bought additional landfill. It's ridiculous. When we have products and we have companies like RB Rubber that would recycle those. RB Rubber in my own hometown has to import tires from Canada in order to make all their mats and equipment. My concern about that is we turn it around into a usable product and it's an export.
Response, Senator Dunn. Prior to the meeting, our chairman graciously suggested that we meet in House District 59. I would welcome that meeting to show you the process. I think you see that pretty sophisticated recycling, but always willing to add more.
Mr. Chair, I just don't want our terrain to turn into a one giant trampoline.
Okay, and I think that's a very important issue. In the future, let's more open up and discuss that. And yes. During the meantime, since time constraint, let us hold on. And I want to finish the presentation, and after that, if we have time, we will have time to discuss more. Okay? If you cooperate in that regard, I do appreciate it. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, it's hard to get import data, and we tried really hard in the past several years to come up with import data. Export data is available through port data, and it will be possible to get some picture about import through port, but a lot of products goes through ports to get to another destination, not for our use. So import data is highly unreliable and it's usually unavailable.
And thank you.
I'm sorry to report to you that.
Even though we might not have a scientific data, at least give us some idea where we are standing. We are exporting more than import. We'd like to have some idea on that issue. If it's not, even though it is not, might not be 100% accurate.
Mr. Chair, I'm representing that, and I'll try to come up with it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Because the non-manufacturing sector is about 85% of total economy, we should pay very close attention to our population change in income. Now, in the Oregon has been fortunate to have continuous net in-migration despite the fact that the economy was going through tough times. So one of the reasons why we had very mild recession in 1990-91 was we had huge inflow of migration. And that helped the economy, construction and other services and retail. Now, in 2001-2002, we had some boost in population gains, but it was nowhere near to 2% that we used to have in the early part of 1990. So that help wasn't there during the last recession.
Now, if you look at total population growth, about two-thirds of this population growth is explained by net migration, and that has a huge implication on our population composition, because between the census period from 1990 and 2000, a substantial change occurred. If you look at education attainment, now this is the portion of population that had bachelor's degree and above, out of 25 years and older. It was about 20% in 1990, and at the end of 2000 we had 25%. So in short 10 years, the population that had bachelor's degrees and advanced degrees increased substantially. Now, what does that mean to our economy? Now, if you look at our production function, so to speak, the business firms use just pure labor, but there in this pure labor, you have human capital component in it. Now, you are going to use machine and equipment too. Economic theory predicts that if you increase human capital component, then pure labor component reward also increases. The productivity will go up if we increase just the human capital component. This is human capital component. During the same period, we had a substantial decline in the population of less than high school degrees from 18.5 to about 15%. This is a huge achievement and increases human capital component, and that's going to lift up the productivity, and that's going to lift up the real wage that's paid to our workers. And this is a huge change. And if you compare that with U.S. average, the U.S. average is about 24%. Now we exceed U.S. average. A little way to go to catch up with Washington State. But it's such a remarkable change, and that bodes really well for our workforce down the road.
Okay, Vice Chair Merkley.
Thank you. While you're addressing human capital, I heard a statistic yesterday that I'd like you to comment on or give us the correct one, which is that we are one of the lowest states in the country for the number of engineering degrees on a per capita basis, which would argue we have a long ways to go. Just ask you if that is that in fact accurate? Are we underperforming on engineering degrees, and is that a concern we should have in stimulating our economy?
Mr. Chair and Representative Merkley, I neglected to point out the connection between net migration and higher educational attainment. Now, before I answer your question, let me first say that these new migrants from either outer states and from foreign countries, they have very high educational skills, I should say. They have very high degrees. They come here with enough skills, and that actually helped raise our educational attainment level. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there are so many different statistics that show depending on what statistics you use, our state is lagging behind in our higher education spending. there is enough merit in it, and I would, from someone who's teaching at the university, or part-time at this point, I would strongly ask you committee members to visit this issue and think about it, because the perception is such that the state of Oregon is not really paying attention to higher education. And it is the perception that, I mean, regardless of what the statistics are, it is the perception that may negatively affect our standing with other states, with other people, with other countries. So if we cannot spend real dollars on education, at least we can spend some PR money to to say that, you know, the facts are different. You know, we have some statistics to back up. We see higher educational attainment in the during the census period. Okay, this is just one statistic that I want to show, and these are, this is not a real comprehensive index. It doesn't cover much of criteria either, but considering labor costs and energy costs and tax burdens, the economy.com, which is a respected economic consulting agency, came up with also doing business index. And considering U.S. average is 100%, of course, California is high, Washington State is a little bit high, our state is ranked even below Idaho. Of course, you know, we have high minimum wage, but overall wage level is lower. We have lower energy costs, that helps. And as far as tax burdens are concerned, there are many different statistics. I won't even try and get into discussing. But, you know, on top of these criteria, there are, again, the perception is important. If we create an environment where the businesses are welcome, and those businesses who are here will be helped so that they can stay, creating that kind of environment, I think is very, very important. Now, I'm speaking for myself because I'm a private tutor for my kids, I'm teaching at the university, I'm working at the state, but my wife owns a small business. So I help her from time to time. So I'm coming to you having many different perspectives, not because my honorable chairman is here, but because I have enormous respect for you committee members. I am really looking forward to working with you. If I can be of any service in coming up with any idea or any, just anything to help our economy, I'm here to serve you. So please, just don't hesitate to call me. This is just one statistic that I really wanted to show, that there are many criteria, but in one criteria that national economists and business people look at shows our state is still competitive as far as doing business is concerned. So that's probably I can wrap up my discussion this way, or if you want me to go on, I can do that too. If you can tell me how much time I have.
Since this is the first meeting, why don't you wrap up at the basic point, and then we will open up for questions.
The following slides talk about global and national economic setting. Now, what happens is we're seeing a little bit of slowdown in the global economy, and we saw that in our economy in the later part of last year. Our state hit a soft patch too. We had a couple of months of job loss, but last month we gained back some of the jobs. That's a good thing. Now, this deceleration in the economic growth probably is not the start of a more serious problem, unlike in the beginning of 2001, unlike the beginning of 1990. Because U.S. consumers are resilient, and we saw that in December retail sales figures, despite all the hype about, you know, Walmart not meeting sales target on the upper end, retailers did great, partly because of auto sales. But anyways, consumer spending is resilient, and investment spending is still strong. Now, one of the reasons why business firms can spend more on investment is they are sitting on huge amount of money. They made a lot of money in the past 2 or 3 years. They were very stingy in giving away bonuses, I should say. But that's typical of an early part of recovery, because workers are being squeezed, if I can say that expression, to perform better, and the profits are great. Now, it's about time that the business firms spend a little more on labor, because now productivity is not going up as much as before. So then business firms have to pay a little more. But having said that, the firms are still sitting on huge cash at this point. They have still high profitability, and that bode well for additional investment spending. That bode very well. That is a good sign for our manufacturing sector. So we're going to continue to do well in our manufacturing sector. And export, as far as exports are concerned, some Asian countries now are having a little bit of slowdown, including China. They're trying to they're having overheated economy in the past couple of years, so they want to slow down a little, and that's going to affect our exports, because when China slows down, the neighboring countries will slow down together, and because of just slowdown, simultaneous slowdown, our exports to Asia may slow down a little too, and those that are a danger. Now, as far as oil prices are concerned, expectation is that it's going to stabilize at about $40 to $45. Now, what happened last year is the oil price was higher not only because of short supplies, but at the same time there was a huge demand from China. And in fact, China explained about half of increasing oil consumption. So then when China slows down, that's going to put a little bit less pressure on oil price, and we're seeing that already. Now, oil price is back up a little, but you know, it's down, substantially down from 54-55 about 2 months, 3 months ago. So that's a good sign. Now, as far as interest rates are concerned, the expansion of the economy will bring about higher interest rates. There's no question about that. And there is also a little bit of inflation pressure. Today's report about producer price index, wholesale price index, is a good one, because it shows a huge decline. Now, that's largely because of decline in oil prices.
So inflation is a threat, but it's a very low level threat at this point. So inflation is looking good. Interest rate will go up, but it will go up at a measured pace, and Greenspan, the chairman, will not do any crazy things to disrupt the economy, and you can bet on it. And oil prices will stabilize, and it's not. There is always a danger that the oil price may go up, but the supply from Russia looks good, and the Chinese economy is not really red hot at this point, and the U.S. economy is enjoying sort of Goldilocks growth. So not too hot, not too, you know, cold kind. So that's a good sign. Now, so all these considered, that the Oregon's economy is expected to do relatively well in the next 2 or 3 years. So we're optimistic. With caution, of course. So we're expecting that the economy, our economy, would grow at about 2% clip for a couple of years, and before it goes down a little. But we are not going to have major slowdown in employment growth, because when we were hitting a soft patch in November, October and November, there was a worry that our economy may see another series of employment losses, but that's not happening. In December, we gained back some of the jobs, so that's a good trend. So today, I started with looking at industry competition at the state. I looked at employment and employment situation. I had some comments on unemployment situation, but most of them are relatively academic from my point of view, if you say. And then I touched on briefly a global and national economic environment and their relation to our economy. And all in all, at this point, I am happy to report to you that in the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to see a very decent employment gains at about 2%, and corresponding relatively strong personal income growth at about a little over 5.5%. And because I'm from Office of Economic Analysis, I have to say that because of a little bit of delayed effects, our state coffer will not fill as fast you hope to see. You got to see employment gains, and employment gains will bring about some personal income gains, and we have enough personal income gains, then they'll be able to pay more taxes. So there is a little bit of delay. There's a lag working. So you will have to be patient in terms of revenue expectations. And I thank you for listening to me. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer any of them.
Thank you, Dr. Bad. Any questions from the Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Dr. Beck. Could you just tell me, what page 20, what are these statistics based on? For example, if you say job gains are finally coming, 1.8% growth in 04, 2.1, the ones you just spoke to, what do those mean? But because previously on one slide it showed that we need 19,000 jobs. I mean, I just I don't quite understand this.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, yes. Compared to the peak of employment, we have about 20,000 jobs to gain to reach that peak, but we're down. So from the peak of about 1.62 million, we're about down to 1.56.
62 million jobs?
Right, jobs.
Total jobs, public and private.
Right, but then, because we're down, now we're gaining back jobs. So year over year, we're seeing an increase. But that increase is not big enough to reach to the peak employment level that we used to have in November 2000. So we went up and up and up in the 1990s, and then we hit the peak in November of 2000. We went down. So we have losses, negative growth. And then we hit the bottom because we couldn't go any lower. So we hit the bottom and we're going back up again. So what that means is from the low point of 2003, we gained about 45,000 jobs. But then that wasn't enough for us to get back to the peak of employment. That's what it means. So 1.8 is not enough to gain back all the lost jobs. So to reach the peak of the employment that we used to enjoy in 2000, we need another 20,000 jobs. And that we're going to hit that level in the middle of 2005. And then from then on, we're going to hit new records. So from 2004 to 2005, we're going to have another 2% job growth. It's about 45,000 jobs. And then 2006, we're going to have another a little over 30,000 jobs created.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up, please? I'm just wondering what that's based on. For example, if you look at the in industry graphs that you have later, mm-hmm. I mean, we're not going to work in timber. This shows we're really going under, and that's 5,000 new jobs. We're getting a little bit of retail, but they don't pay anything. And the computer business is, going to be slightly up, it shows on page 22. But where are those 30,000, 20,000 jobs coming from? I know 5,000 could come from timber if we could go log out. But otherwise, I don't know where they're coming from.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, yeah, that's a good question. Where do the job come from? We're going to have job gains, but where? In the past several years, we lost manufacturing jobs, and loss of manufacturing jobs brought about the losses in other jobs, supporting jobs. So a change in this year is we're going to gain back some of the manufacturing jobs and especially in transportation equipment, and we're going to gain.
So you're talking about the trucking companies, the Freightliner's going to have a boom, and so and what else?
So what happens is, as these manufacturing jobs increase, they're going to have spillovers to other sectors. They're going to create some income. So it's like a multiplier effect kicking in, which means we have a job gain in some strong sectors like transportation equipment, like computer and electronics, like healthcare industries.
Okay, then, service industry.
Right. Okay. So we're gonna see some job gains there and corresponding income gains.
then what happens is through multiplying effects, because these jobs create other jobs and other opportunities, we're going to see the retail jobs increasing, although their pay is relatively low. And people will go out and spend more on leisure industries. And healthcare industry is growing really fast. We see some bright prospect on education and industry. Unlike the state of Washington, our information sector is lagging, and we don't have much hope. It includes publishing and software and all these. We are seeing continuous job losses in that sector. We have high hopes, but it's I don't know whether it's competition from Washington State or other states. We're not seeing good job numbers there. So we're not going to see job gains in the information sector. But trade sector, wholesale, retail, and transportation services, we're going to see overall services, including healthcare services, jobs increasing. Now, let me point out that in the beginning I said that our economy is becoming very much like our nation. What it means is we're going through a changing phase. So manufacturing is maturing. The expansion of manufacturing sector in the 90s is like we're stealing jobs away from other states. That's how we grew. Other states, as an aggregate, lost computer and electronic jobs. There's no question about that. Employment went down in the 90s in electronic and computer-related products. Now, we gained a lot of jobs in that sector. So we stole some of the jobs from other states. Now, it's not... Well, it was a manufacturing process. It was a manufacturing job, basically. All the high paying, it was a manufacturing job. And what happens is, as manufacturing matures, we're going to lose manufacturing jobs, either to other states, late starters. I don't know who started late. There are some other states, like Arizona, try and attract away some of the high-tech industry, and foreign countries will attract away some of our manufacturing facilities. So we're going to lose some of the manufacturing jobs, and as we lose some of the manufacturing jobs and other sectors grow, we're going to change, we're going to go through a changing phase. So then as our manufacturing sector share declines in employment, other sector jobs will increase as a proportion, as a ratio of total population. So retail sector, service sector, and other sectors will behave just like other states or the U.S. average. So it's we went through a manufacturing revolution, if you will, in the 90s, and in this decade, my guess is we're going to go through a more maturing phase, less emphasis on manufacturing, more emphasis on services, and believe it or not, we have a little more room to grow in the retail sector, and retail is retail analysts. Oregon looks very, very good for square foot sales figures. Looks really, really good. That's why a lot of strip malls and shopping malls are being built around. So as time goes on, our state will look much more like the nation or national average.
Mr. Chair.
That the
I'm sorry.
Are you asking in conjunction with the same line at the.
I'm sorry. I thought you were through with that thought. Go ahead with that thought. I thought you were through with that thought.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Riley, I'm Representative Riley. I think I'm down with my answer to Representative.
I just wondered if it was going to be government.
Yes. Hold on. Vice Chair Bruin has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time, I'll be very brief. Dr. Beck, I appreciate your analysis on where we've been and where we're going. And what I hear from your analysis primarily is that we do nothing as a state, sort of a status quo model will eke out this few percent, maybe 2% growth over the next few years. And I'm sure what we would all be interested in is what can we do proactively to accelerate that. And I realize we could spend a week talking about that. But if you could very briefly just overview some big concepts, what we can do as a legislative body and as the state of Oregon to accelerate something more than that status quo small growth over the next few years, in your opinion.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Bowen, that's a real big question, and I won't think about it, but I'll have to admit that I don't have just quick and satisfying answers to you at this point. I'm a trained economists, and trained economists tend to be very conservative in their way of thinking. As far as government stepping in, well, first about my history, I started as a very I started studying economics as an interventionist, with interventionist mind. So I grew up in South Korea, which means government led economic growth, and I grew up thinking that the government is cure for all. So we have good industrial policies. I still respect the president then. So instead of answering your questions directly, I was trained by a Chicago economist, which means Chicago has very non-interventionist classical tradition. Government is needed only for very minimized role, and the job of the government is to guarantee a level playing field. That's all, and government should step there. The smaller the government, the better off the economy is. There's no question that the government can make a real difference in certain areas. I would point out providing more money to education. For selfish reasons, I would.
Mr. Beck, for that, we'd like to wrap up.
Yes.
So if you shorten your answer, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you. For my selfish reasons, I would like to see a little more attention given toward higher education. Not everything in higher education, but this specialized, some specific, and two or three big items in higher education areas, probably some engineering or science areas. And that's all I can say at this point.
Yes, for the benefit of members, I just wanted to point out that Dr. Beck is from the Office of Economic Analysis, and their main job is to do the economic projection so that you can do your budget. And that's one of the reasons why you see in Dr. Beck's presentation some predictions as to what is going to happen with the Oregon economy. When they come out with their economic forecasts for, I think it's one for February and another one for May, that you'll be basing your budget on, they have to basically predict what's going to be happening with the Oregon economy in the first half of the year 2007. So that's why you see their emphasis on trying to predict what's going to happen with the various industrial sectors. Yeah.
And the members, we are going to have three committee meetings in a week, so we have a lot of issues ahead of us, and we will have a lot of answers, hopefully. And next Monday, we are going to invite the director of the OECDD, is that correct? Yes. And Marty Bentley, who will be coming to explain the conditions of the economy, and he can also some answers for the questions we might have. And then Wednesday, I'm going to invite the director of the lottery, and Mr. Penn, and we need to find out what's going on in the lottery. It's a big issue. And so we have a lot of things we need to discuss in the future. So before we close, any members have a final questions? Well, thank you very much for cooperation. And usually I give an opportunity at the audience to have a final statement or some testimony, since we are not going to do that at this time. And so if there is no further business, that the House T&E meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, Dr. Baer.